Good evening. Nice sitting with you tonight. You're glowing. So, we are on our fifth lesson, and these are real, real important. You think, well, I'm not going to be able to remember all of this. No, you're not. And it's not designed for you to remember this in the way of memorizing it. But the teachings are reminding you of the truth that's already within you. So when you hear the truth, it just, you hear it. You hear it on a completely different level than you may even realize. And so it's useful. These things may not happen immediately, but these are things that the Buddha have said to look for. You'll remember. When it's time, you'll remember. And so we're at the four foundations of mindfulness. The Buddha said, be mindful of the body. Because this body has all our curriculum. It has the mind. It is where we feel the sensations. It is where we feel feelings and emotions. And we're going to talk tonight because we have talked about thoughts. We talked about thoughts last week. And then tonight we're going to talk about how these thoughts kind of cluster together and create all kinds of mind states that are in our interest to find out what they are. Because mostly without meditation, for me anyway, we're not even aware of the mind states that we are carrying along with us. So we are going to look closer and set the intention. What are these clusters? What are these mind states saying to us? And we begin to see that we have a whole cluster of mind baggage that we've carried around with us for who knows how long. And so our patterns of thinking, our stashes of likes and dislikes, our assumptions, our emotional triggers we all have, stories, they're all within us, coming up constantly. And that's what meditation does. It allows, through being quiet and still in the practice, for us to start being able to notice these important things. Now, why is it important to know them? Because in this practice, we realize that the simplest thing is just to recognize what's going on. Being conscious of all these things, that all these four foundations of mindfulness does within our system, because then we connect to wisdom. And then it is truly the wisdom that frees us. Frees us from what? Well, frees us from our crazy mind, for one thing, which is where we suffer the most. So the Buddha points us where to look. And traditionally, we start with this fourth foundation mindfulness with the hindrances, our difficult energies. I mean, traditionally, it's something that's taught because of the fact that these will come up. Probably you'll be more aware of in your daily practice. but they are mind states, or they're all this phenomena that comes up in us all the time. And if we don't recognize them or allow them, then that's where we get caught up in all kinds of things that make us miserable. And, of course, if we're caught in these mind states, then we're not in the present moment where life is lived completely. So they're persistent. They're persistent. And we can find ourselves wallowing in them. I love to say that. Wallowing in the wallowing. And so we see this mind, the wanting mind. We all have the wanting mind. We just need to know it. We need to know when the wanting mind is there. And with the wanting mind, we begin to see for ourselves experientially that with that type of mind state, we do leave the present moment. But what if you're with the person you love the most? What if there's a beautiful sunset out there? What if, I mean, there are so many things we miss in our lives because of the mind states and the wanting mind. It's the mind that wants things to be other than they are. Okay, universe. Okay, whoever. You didn't get it right, because that's not exactly how I would do it. Well, that's where misery begins, is we don't understand the acceptance of life as it is the freedom, brings the happiness. Doesn't sound right, does it? So the second one is the aversive mind, pushing away from life. We, as we practice, we begin to see that it's okay to be and allow the good, the bad, and the ugly in all of us. We stuff it because we think that's who we are. And so we don't allow the completeness of life as a result. But that's what the practice teaches us. It teaches us how to hold the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that wholeness, we become more alive. But the aversive mind's not wanting what we're given. It's arguing with life. And so the third one, we always laugh about this one, sloth and torpor, because you think after 2,600 years of these teachings, someone would think of something besides sloth and torpor. I've never heard anything but the sloth and torpor. Randy and I used to go sit with a group in the Carolinas that they sat together for years, but they had t-shirts. These were week-long retreats, but they had, some of them had t-shirts that said sloth and torpor. And in a 5 or 7 day retreat, you definitely come up against sloth and torpor. Excuse me. And that's this laziness of mind, sluggishness, a mind that's filled with sloth and torpor and wants just to go to sleep. I mean, we know it. We know we're conditioned when we're quiet and still. We're conditioned, we're trained to go to sleep. And that's why we have not been privy to the things that come to us with being quiet and still, but not going to sleep. Now, nothing's wrong with being sleepy. Again, we want to recognize it and allow it. We want to get to know sleepiness in a way we've not ever tried to get to know sleepiness. And all of this nurtures us. In what way? Well, we begin to live life completely, not leaving anything out. Fourth one, restlessness. And this is a mind that is in a state of worry, regret, agitation, not able to stay concentrated. But again, in your practice, it's like, oh, restless mind. Oh, this is restless mind. And with that acknowledgement, again, there's a whole different way we relate to it. Because if we're naming it like that, we're not taking it personally. We just know it's a phenomena that arises in all of us. So it's just part of life. Or a restless mind is one that's jumping from one object to another without mindfulness. Now, mindfulness okays everything. That's the secret, consciousness. And then the last one is doubt. And some say it's the one of the difficult ones. Because until we see through this doubt, it incapacitates the mind, blocking our effort for clarity. So if we're sitting and taking the effort, the right effort to meditate, and we're sitting there, and then we're thinking, oh, nothing's happening. I don't think this is working. Oh, you know, what does she know? What does he know? Then the doubting mind comes up, and if we wallow in it, it may keep us from continuing to do the most important thing in our life, and that is to become conscious of everything in life. So again, we're wallowing in confusion. And Joseph Goldstein says, it's not a trivial thing we have set about doing. The most difficult of all possible tasks is to come to understand one's own mind. But it's not impossible. There have been many beings who have conquered these 1,000 energies 1,000 times, and they have given us advice and guidance. And that would be our teachings. End of quote. So the first big help is to just recognize as well as we do for the other foundations of mindfulness. What are they? How do they feel? That kind of, oh, this is what restlessness feels like. Oh, this is what doubt is all about. And then we begin to recognize its true nature because we allow it. And then we go to it with a very investigative mind. That's completely different than any other way we go to it. Oh, I want to get to know you because I don't know you. I thought I knew you, but I don't know you. So we're recognizing the true nature of these energies. So we begin to look closely how we notice them, how we're dealing with them, and we begin to work with them. Portia Nelson describes our dilemma. It's autobiography in 5 chapters. Chapter 1. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. This isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I fall in. It's a habit. But my eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. And I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I try walking down a different street. So this is what this practice is doing. It is allowing us to see what is creating so much suffering in any given moment. And so, this autobiography somehow speaks very directly to our human experience. Here I go again. Same old, same old. Wallowing in the wallowing. Something that I knew, I never knew that could be addressed in a whole different way. So, this practice not only enables us to see that it's all grist for the mill, all of it, and how to relate to it, but it's also a process of making mistakes, confronting our demons, and oftentimes looking at the same patterns in difficulties. Now again, the first thing I am conditioned to do is shame. But of course, that's not helpful to shame ourselves. So that's why the acronym RAIN, the Buddha tells us what to do, to recognize it, to be conscious of it, to allow it, not to push it away, not to do anything else, let it be there. And to investigate it. And again, this investigation comes from a sincere intention of, really, I want to know. I want to know the truth. I want to know the truth that I've been told all my life will set me free. So, what's important to understand is that these very states are the place of practice. Nothing's wrong with them. You haven't done it wrong when they arise. The doubt, the fear, the difficulty, the anger that arise in our life are what makes our practice juicy. It's our curriculum. I mean, how often have we had a course where we take this curriculum with us everywhere we go? It's what's happening within. and exactly what to do with what's happening within. So, you know, we really just want to sit still and be peaceful and then get up and go our way, which is fine. But it's not going to keep enable us to shift our life towards more happiness if that's all we want out of the practice. So we have to look. We have to look at it all. We have to look at the difficulties, along with setting intentions of being with the joys. Trungpa Rinpoche said, these difficulties, these energies, are manure for Bodhi, for awakening, are manure for awakening, or enlightenment. It's what it is. And it's a very different spirit of relating to these difficulties when seeing them in their true nature. It releases us. It brings ease to our life. To see that there is some light of our being, of our wisdom, of our heart, that can shine through even when we are perfectly imperfect. See the acceptance? In spite of them. Because we're all caught in them. We're all conditioned with them. And we find that mostly as they arise, they are based on some stories that we tell ourselves. He did, I did, she did, I wish, if only. And as we begin to look at the nature of the mind, we can see what storytellers we are. And really, Buddha says that stories do a couple things only. They make us right. Oh, let me tell you a story because I'm going to make sure I'm right in the story. Or they make us feel better. Because why? Well, because we justify. They make us feel more comfortable. But they also enables us to avoid some feelings that are very, very important to feel deeply, consciously, that we don't want to feel, that all the things that we hide from ourselves. And like I've said to you earlier, the subconscious is going to rise if you do this practice. And so we are going to see things, all kinds of things about ourselves. But we're going to do it in a loving way towards ourselves and not judging and holding ourselves in loving kindness. It's important. It's important. So I'm going to stop there and we'll have Randy come in and we'll open it to you.